the Christian state of life or sermons on the principal duties of Christians in general and of different states in particular. By Father Francis Hunold, translated from the original German edition of Cologne, 1740, by Father J. Allen, D.D. Copyright 1886. On the watchfulness of parents over their children, preached on the 18th Sunday after Pentecost. Be of good heart, son, thy sins are forgiven thee. St. Matthew chapter 9, verse 2. Christ could speak like that, for no one but God can forgive sin, except those to whom he has given that power. Christian parents, God has given you great power over your sons and daughters, but he has not empowered you to forgive them their sins. Oh, if you had that power, if you could say, whenever your children are guilty of sin, be of good heart, son or daughter, thy sins are forgiven thee. It would be easy for you, then, to bring up your children to heaven. But what am I saying? You can bestow on them a still greater benefit than the forgiveness of their sins. What benefit is that? You can, if you manage matters properly, prevent your children from committing any grievous sin so that they do not need forgiveness. And that depends upon your bringing them, giving them a Christian training. We have treated last Sunday of the good tongue, that is, the good instruction that is necessary to a Christian training. But that alone is not enough. You must also have sharp eyes, so as to watch carefully over all their actions, as I shall show you in today's instruction. Parents who wish to bring up their children for heaven in a Christian manner and to keep them from sin as they ought must be watchful over all their actions. This is the whole subject. Virgin Mother Mary, you and you holy angels, who always watch over our salvation, cast your gracious eyes on all parents and obtain for them from God the grace of this necessary vigilance. When the cat is away, the mice may play, as the saying is. When children see that no one is looking after them, they do what they like and are generally wild and naughty. We can see that in a school where a lot of little boys are sitting together, as long as the teacher is there and looking about him, they are all as quiet and diligent as possible. There is not a word to be heard unless when they are repeating their lessons or arguing with each other. But if the teacher turns his back for a moment, some, who think he does not see them, begin to whisper and talk together. And if he goes out of the school altogether, and they know that he is wanted outside, what a noise they make then. A swarm of bees is not half so lively as a lot of children when left to themselves. They talk, laugh, shout, cry out, fight, and jump over the benches as if they wish to knock down the house, as they experience to have schools in their houses if the teacher is absent or wanting in vigilance. To prevent that, teachers generally appoint someone, when they are obliged to be absent, to keep order in the school and write down the names of those who make a noise. But that is often of little use, for he who has charge of the children is frequently as bad as they are, or else the children determine at all costs to take advantage of the teacher's absence, although they run the risk of punishment on his return. Nor is it any wonder, for they are children, and act as such. There is nothing to keep them quiet but the sharp eye and unceasing vigilance of a teacher who loves them as his scholars. My dear brethren, a Christian household in which there are little boys and girls is nothing but a school over which the father and mother are placed by God as teachers to instruct their children in the Christian faith and to bring them up to virtue, piety, and the fear of the Lord, that they may live well and die happily, as we have seen in the last sermon. Now, if parents fulfill this duty and often teach and exhort their children to good, they do a great work that is, unfortunately, rarely done nowadays, even by Christians. But what good is it all if they do not continually watch their children to see if their instructions are followed? Not a bit, or at most, very little. If the children find out that they can go where they like, out of sight of their parents, that they can go with whom they like and do what pleases them best, what will become of their conduct then? They will be like the scholars who are left alone by their teacher. Sometimes the eldest son or daughter is told to look after the little ones, to keep them out of mischief, or the latter are instructed to the care of servants. But that is of little use, nor do the children pay any heed to it. It is only their father and mother, whose authority is from God, who can keep them in order, and therefore God has inspired children with a natural respect for their parents. No child is so naughty and disobedient as not to be afraid of doing anything unlawful before its father or mother, unless it is neglected and trained to evil from its infancy. No child is so good, modest, and inclined to virtue as not to be guilty of a few pranks now and then when its parents are not looking. When did the prodigal son of the gospel begin to drink and gamble away his money and live riotously? Was it not when he went to a foreign land, away from under his father's eye? For he certainly would not otherwise have dared to lead such a wicked life. When did Absalom, the eternally unhappy son of a holy father, who was a man after God's own heart, began to rebel against his father and to seduce the subjects of the latter from their allegiance? Was it not when he was forbidden, for having murdered his brother, to look on his father's face or to appear in his sight? Moses was placed by God over the people of Israel as their leader and lawgiver. He gave them many pious exhortations to be always faithful to God, and yet when he went away from them for a short time to the mountain, how did they act? The sacred scripture says, "And the people, seeing that Moses delayed to come down from the mount, gathering together against Aaron, said, 'Arise, make us gods that may go before us.' Nor did they stop until they had brought him all their golden earrings, out of which he made a golden calf, and set it up for them to adore and to offer sacrifice to. And the people sat down to eat and drink, and they rose up to play." My God, what an extraordinary thing! Old and sensible people who had preserved their fidelity to the true God, in the midst of the persecutions of Egypt, that chosen people who had seen so many wonders of the divine goodness always accompanying them in their journeys, now abandoned the true God because their leader and lawgiver was away from them for a short time. What may we not, then, expect of children who are unable to govern themselves on account of their youth, who do not yet feel much desire for a supernatural end or motive, and who are inclined to all sorts of distractions and amusements when they are left to themselves by their leaders and guides, their fathers and mothers. What must become of them if they fall into the hands of wicked, ill-reared children, from whom they can learn nothing good, and by whom they will be led into sin, if the vigilance of their parents does not save them? Alas, that would be as bad as to allow a flock of sheep to wander about in the vicinity of the wolf without a shepherd. Therefore, for a Christian training to be given in the proper way, it is absolutely necessary that parents should keep a watchful eye on all the actions of their children, so as to see how they live and what they do, what evil they commit, what good they do, whether they fear and love God, whether they go to Mass every day, whether and how often they go to confession and communion, whether they attend sermons and catechism, when they go to bed and when they get up, whether they say their morning and evening prayers devoutly, when, where, with whom they go out, what they learn from their teacher, whether they can hear, see, or learn anything good or evil from the servants in the house, how the relatives of the family and the neighbors act with regard to them when they are allowed to visit them, whether the children with whom they play are well or ill-reared, what books they read, etc. Every care must be taken to keep them constantly occupied in some lawful manner. They must never be allowed to remain idle, for that would give the devil every opportunity of leading them into all kinds of sin and vice. They must be carefully kept away from dangerous company, and even from the least occasion of sin. Without this care and watchfulness, all your teaching and exhorting will be of no avail. This was the principal thing with all pious, God-fearing parents who wished to bring up their children for heaven. When Sarah saw her son Isaac playing only once with Ishmael, the son of her handmaid, she could not rest until the latter and her son were turned out of the house. She said to her husband Abraham, "Cast out this bondwoman and her son." She was afraid that he might corrupt the innocent Isaac. The patriarch Jacob, too, was ill at ease when his sons, although they were grown up, were away from him, minding their flocks. His father's heart was filled with anxiety to know what they were doing and how they were getting on. Therefore, he used to send his beloved son Joseph to them. "Go," he said, "and see if all things be well with thy brethren, and bring me word again what is doing." The same anxiety troubled Isaiah when his sons were absent from him, and therefore he sent David to see not merely what they were doing, but in what company they were, as we read in the 17th chapter of the first book of Kings. "Go see thy brethren, if they are well, and learn with whom they are placed." The sacred scripture says of the God-fearing Job that he was not satisfied with knowing merely what his children did, but also that he was anxious about what they thought, although God alone could know that, and therefore, rising up early, he offered holocausts for every one of them, for he said, "Lest perhaps my sons have sinned and have blessed God in their hearts." The meaning of that is, according to the Septuagint, "Lest perhaps my sons have thought something wicked against God in their hearts." So did Job all days. Therefore, careful parents, like Job, are not content with knowing what their children do outwardly. They also try to find out their inward acts. They note not merely what they say, but also, as far as possible, what they think. They try to find out where their evil inclinations tend, so that they may provide a timely remedy for them. Much may be learned of their thoughts by watching their looks and actions, and as with the other men, a little thing is enough to give cause for suspecting them of evil inclinations. But it is easy to talk of being anxious about the thoughts and desires of children. If parents only kept their eyes open to the outward acts of their children, it would be something. What a great want there is in this respect with most parents. Some are occupied with far different things the whole day, either at home or elsewhere. The last thing that troubles them is to look after the children. They are very curious about what is going on in town or in the country or in the homes of other people. They pay no attention to what occurs in their own homes or to what their sons and daughters are doing. Sometimes they do not see their children for the whole day, unless at meals. They allow them to go out when they please, to stand talking in the streets or at the door in the morning, the evening, or even at night with whom they like. How can they have a good effect on young people? Is that the way to watch over the actions of children when they are allowed to run through the streets as they like, boys and girls together, Christians and Jews, playing, shouting, fighting with each other in full liberty? Is it not the case? I have myself seen, with much bitterness of heart, girls of 10, 11, and 12 years of age, of decent families, playing with very wild and naughty boys in the public streets. A decent Christian parent thinks they can bring up their children properly in that way? Is that the way to exercise parental vigilance when sometimes all the neighbors can speak of the willfulness, wickedness, and vices of certain children, while the fathers and mothers know nothing at all about them? So little do they watch over their children. Alas, unhappy children, whose father and mother think as little of you as a runaway dog. Nay, would that they thought even that much of you. Sometimes a gentleman loses his hunting dog, or a lady her lap dog. The servants are then immediately sent out to look for it and bring it home so that it may not run away altogether or be seized upon by strangers, while the son and daughter may run off wherever they like and stop away half the day, and no one ever thinks of looking for them. People are anxious enough to know if the sheep and cows have come home at the proper time in the evening from the pasture, but they trouble themselves very little to know whether their sons and daughters are at home early in the evening. Ah, if that philosopher of whom Kutrach writes in his book on the instructions of children were to rise from the dead and to stand on the top of the highest tower of the town and cry out, "Where are you going to, citizens? You spend all your time and care in business, and little or none on your children, to whom you must leave your wealth." In the same way, I should like to cry out in the ears of those careless parents, "You, fathers and mothers, where are you going? What is your business now?" "I'm going to a lawyer," one of them might answer, "about a case I have on hand." "I am going to a doctor, to a debtor of mine, to get some money, to a merchant, to do business with him, to the market, to buy some things I want in the house, to my cousin or neighbor, to pay a visit, or to pass the time." "And where are your children meanwhile? Are they well looked after, under the care of a good and pious teacher? If so, then go, in God's name, and do your business as well as you can. But during the time that you cannot look after them, are they idle at home or running about the streets with wicked children? Or are they in company from which they can learn nothing good? Oh, if so, go back at once. Go back, half-hearted parents. Your children are of more importance to you than anything else. Your first care must be their eternal salvation. When you have looked after that, you may attend to other things. For what purpose do you intend the money that you lay up with such labor and trouble? Is it not to support your children? But what a folly it is to neglect and forget those very children whose bodies you labor so much for. As St. John Chrysostom says, that would be like a foolish gardener who would work outside the garden to bring in the water so as to water his plants and trees, while he hardly ever looks after the plants themselves, or cares whether the trees grow straight or crooked, whether they bring forth good or bad fruit. Go back, parents. Look after your children better. But there is no use in talking that way to those who do not wish to hear. But if there are some parents who keep their sons and daughters at home and do not allow them to run about at will, nor to go into bad company, yet these very parents may be guilty of great and deplorable carelessness of another kind, by not caring what sort of servants they have, although the children are with the servants the whole day. If the latter are faithful to their duties in the house, diligent and obedient, that is all the parents care about. They never trouble themselves about how the servants talk and act with the children, and what example they give them. In the same way, parents are guilty of sin by not caring whether the schoolmaster or drawing, dancing, or fencing master, or others who have to instruct the children, are pious or not, whether their moral character is good or bad. It is enough, as they say, to be able to get the children out of the way for a while. Alas, I must again say with St. John Chrysostom, we select the best shepherd we can find to look after our sheep and cows, but it does not matter to what master or mistress we instruct the immortal souls of our children, that they may be kept from evil and be trained to virtue. Most especially do those parents sin in this respect who allow their children, and particularly their grown-up daughters, to have free intercourse with persons of the opposite sex, although it may be in their own houses and under the pretext of securing a suitable match or of close relationship, and also they who permit their engaged children to be alone with the person they are about to marry. Alas, when I think of this abuse, I can weep bitter tears with the prophet. Who will give me a fountain of tears to weep for the countless precious souls who are thus sullied and defiled? My God, to leave two people of opposite sexes alone? Two who love each other foolishly? Two who know that they will soon be married? Who will give me tears enough to bewail the countless sins that are committed in such circumstances by impure desires, looks, and actions? How many lose their virtue thereby before their marriage? How can there be luck or grace in the marriage that is begun by offending God? Careless parents, what answer will you give hereafter to your just judge if you deliberately, or through carelessness, allow your children to act thus and make yourselves responsible for the sins they commit? And if they do not commit sin, which would indeed be a wonderful thing, you leave them, at least, in the proximate danger of it? Yet so many fathers and mothers think so little of it that these sins are hardly ever mentioned in confession and never repented of and atoned for. Further, what sort of care do those parents take of their children, who not only allow them to do what they like at home and to go out walking and talking and with whom they please, but even place them beyond their reach in such a way that they could not watch over them even if they wished to do so? I allude to those who, without any necessity or grievous cause, send their sons, and especially their daughters, to foreign lands to learn a useless language that they could perhaps have learned at home just as well, or to be instructed in the fine arts, which they have as good, if not better, opportunities of learning in their own country, or to learn the ways of the world, which will be of more harm than good to their souls their whole lives long. I do not say, my dear brethren, that this is to be always condemned, provided the son is in a boarding house or the daughter in a convent, where the parents can be certain they will be well looked after, as if they were at home. But few concern themselves about that, and therefore their children bring back from foreign countries nothing else than that they can say, I have been in such and such a town. I have seen this, that, and the other thing. What do I say? Nothing else? Would that it were no worse. They bring back often nothing but unchristian and frivolous manners, sinful consciences, and perverse and corrupted lives. Would to God that this were not proved by experience. I ask you, O parents, to give testimony to this. Must not some of you acknowledge in your hearts that if you have been guilty of sins in your youth, you learned and committed the most of them when you were out of your parents' sight? And now children must learn how to lose their souls in order to be able to speak a foreign language and put on the vain, frivolous, and wicked manners of the world in order to complete their education? Fathers and mothers, you must give an account to your judge for this, thus driving your children away from you into the occasion of sin. Finally, what must I say and think of those parents who are not only careless in watching over their children so as to keep them from sin and its dangers, but actually lay snares for them at home and elsewhere, and lead them into the occasions of sin? What a fearful thing! Many fathers go to the tavern. Their young sons must go with them. Mothers go into company and bring their daughters with them, into places which ought to be shunned by young people who wish to preserve their innocence. They have pictures in their houses and statues in their gardens that no man or woman, not to speak of curious children, could look at without being scandalized. They allow their little boys and girls to occupy the same bed. They are not at all cautious of what they say in their presence, and are very remiss in teaching them Christian modesty. Thus the poor children learn wickedness in their very tenderest years. Christian parents, poverty does not excuse you from the duty of seeing that your children are never placed in the occasion of violating modesty. But, you say, what danger is there? They are young and innocent and do not know anything of vice. Be careful, or they will learn it much quicker than the Our Father or the Creed. Are they still innocent? Then keep them so, but they will not long remain so unless you are very careful. The philosopher Aristotle says that children begin to dream in their fourth or fifth year. I go a little further and say that they begin to hear and see in their fourth or fifth year, or even earlier. And although they cannot sin because they have not the use of reason, yet many sins can be caused in afterlife by what they hear and see in their childhood. If we were to ask many of the perverse, corrupted youths of our times what Jesus Christ asked the Father in the Gospel, "How long is your son in this miserable state?" they could answer as that father did, "From infancy." "How long have you been so wicked?" "From infancy." "When did you learn to commit that sin?" "From my very childhood." "I learned it from my parents, from my brothers and sisters at home." And such is indeed the case. Christian parents, be watchful over the actions of your children from their very infancy, if you wish to preserve them from sin and to keep them in the fear of God. If you had 100 eyes, you should keep them all open for this purpose, but you have only 2, and therefore must be all the more careful. You should inspire yourselves with a holy fear by thinking, "I must one day stand before my judge to answer for the sins of my children, if I have been the cause of them by a want of vigilance." Nor must you imagine that this is too unjust or severe towards you, for you judge in the same way of others. If your watch goes wrong, you accuse the watchmaker and say that he does not know his business. If you see a child with a distorted foot, you get indignant and think that if the mother or the nurse had been more careful, the foot would have been all right. And in the same way, the divine judge will say, when he sees a son or a daughter living in an unchristian manner, "Father and mother, what have you been doing? Why have you allowed the unfortunate child to be thus perverted?" And what answer will you make to him? You may say, "I have not perverted them. They have done it themselves. I could not prevent them from leading wicked lives." But the judge will answer, "You should have been more watchful over them in their youth. I look upon you as the first cause of their destruction." And such is really the case, Christians. You have, for instance, a clerk in your shop to whom you give a yearly salary on condition that he looks after your goods and takes care of them. Now, suppose that while you are absent, the clerk goes to sleep, and a thief comes in and steals your things. What would you say in that case to the clerk? "Unfaithful servant," you would cry out, full of anger. "You must either make good the loss or go to prison." "But why? What has the poor man done? He went to sleep when he should have remained awake." "But there is no harm in that. When a man is asleep, he could do no evil." "But he should have kept his eyes open and not have allowed my things to be stolen." "He is the cause of the loss I have suffered. He must go to prison." You are quite right. For according to every law, he who has charge of anything is responsible for injuries that happen to it through his negligence. Fathers and mothers, the most precious treasure you have are the immortal souls of your children, whom God has confided to your care with the promise of eternal happiness if you are faithful in your duty. But if you go to sleep and do not watch over your children, so that the devil comes and steals one of them away, then woe to you when you appear before God. How can you make good that irreparable loss? Do not say, what have I done? I have not taught my children anything bad, nor given them bad example, and I have often exhorted them to fear God. That may be, but you have slept when you should have been awake. You were wanting in vigilance, and so your son or daughter is lost. I will require their souls at your hands, the judge will say to you. Think, too, for your consolation, how much you may do for the honor and glory of God, if by your watchfulness you can save your children even from one mortal sin, and how much you can do for the salvation of souls if you bring them by your diligence to heaven along with yourselves. What a pleasing and joyful sight it will be for you on that day when St. Peter will appear with the thousands of Jews that he converted, St. Paul with the countless multitudes of heathens that he gained over to Christ, and the other apostles and missionaries, preachers, confessors, and priests, with all the souls that they instructed and led to heaven. Parents, do what you can now so as to be able to take your place amongst them with your children at your side, and to say to your judge, behold, I have kept those souls and saved them by my watchfulness. With what joy and gladness you will then hear the happy words, well done, good and faithful servant, thou faithful father and good mother. Because thou hast been faithful over a few things, and being watchful over a few souls, I will place thee over many things. Come, enter with thy children into the joy of the Lord. Amen.